Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, and here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the point. And the point today is the wonderful, the marvelous Scott Hanna. Scott, how are you? Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Joe, so much for having me. I definitely appreciate it. I'm doing well. It's been a great day. Another day alive. It's always a good day.
That is a good day. So I've known Scott for many years now, and Scott's just a fascinating guy, lots of energy, great perspective, wonderful head on his shoulders, hardworking, driven man. He lives through many, many sayings, one of them being fortitude, and he'll talk about that. But Scott, before we get into all of that and your business, Fortitude HR Solutions, give us a little bit of background, Scott. Who are you? What is your life? Who is Scott Hannes?
Do you want the like sob story or just like just some general background for you, Joe?
And both your listeners. Both and.
Both. Okay. I love everything that, you know, the city stands for, the people, the culture, the diversity, you know, strong upbringing, grew up, you know, in a great family, very fortunate mom, dad, a lot of support given to me, my sister, sometimes, you know, we have sibling, you know, rivalry, but it's still good. Went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school, went to Padua High School, and then I went to 2 years of community college at Tri-C, transfer all those credits over to BW. And graduated with a business management degree from Baltimore Wallace. So thought, as most probably people do when you go to college, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to make 50 grand, you know, right out of school, I'm going to get into a management position. Well, that's just not the case, right? So had to work my way up the kind of the corporate ladder and spent a lot of time. I started out working in banking. So I was in a management training program. And then unfortunately, my mom got sick. She had cancer. And so 2 months into my role right out of college, like, I'm ready for my life to hit this new journey point. Mom got sick. They gave her like a 10% chance to live. They actually sent her home and said, hey, you're not going to make it. And instead, the doctor called back the surgeon and said, hey, I think we can do this surgery. So did an 11-hour surgery. My mom's a huge fighter. She's an inspiration of my life. And she beat cancer. And I was able, you know, through the bank I worked for, they gave me a 2 month like leave of absence to be with her, but I was taking her to chemo appointments and helping her with physical therapy. So decided not to go back into work. So I graduated college, super excited to like start my life. And then it's like, oh, pause. And my dad was working full time. My sister was in dental hygiene school. And so it was just the right thing to do. So helped her out. And then I got back into banking again, Joe, thinking, oh, I want to be a banker, right? And I didn't want to be a banker. Like, I love people. I love helping people. But that just wasn't the field for me. So I got a job in sales. I was doing sales of like barcode scanners, receipt printers for a small company in Brunswick, Ohio. Really loved my boss, Pete. Just gave me an opportunity to like shine and get into sales and learn the process. And gave me an opportunity to like take over the largest account in the company and be like the account manager. And then also allowed me to start a business up in Canada, selling barcode scanners and receipt printers and library cards to schools and libraries up in Canada. So that was really cool. I got to take a lot of the practical things I learned at BW from management and marketing and apply them into the real world with the actual, you know, the not the theory, but the applicable part. And so that was a lot of fun. Did that for about 2.5 years and got laid off. The company sold. And during that whole time, Joe, I'm like, all right, what's next? And this is where I get into my faith background. So I grew up Catholic and had some unfortunate things happen to me in my life. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So decided I wasn't going to practice my faith anymore. And through a great priest friend that you and I are both friends with, Father Bob, decided to get back into church. I just felt like this calling to do more in my life other than, you know, just live in sin and not do the right thing. And so went back to church, talked to Father Bob, and he got me, involved in Life Teen. And so that's where Joe and I met. We met through a Catholic youth program called Life Teen, where we help teenagers grow closer to Christ through their faith. And so started working in that ministry in 2004, volunteering. I got an opportunity to go to Arizona, where they do like training of all these adults. And met my wife through that conference. Never in a million years did I think I would date, let alone marry, someone from Washington State, but the good Lord had other plans. And when I went there, I actually liked like three other girls besides my wife, Laura. And so I have a great story about that too, Joe. We could talk about most uncomfortable night of my life.
Shelf, but I'm very curious.
Yeah, so make sure we come back to that. But so I found some purpose again in my life, again with my faith and really kind of wanting to give back to other people. So I got an opportunity from somebody I used to work with. You'll know this, Joe, if you don't already. Like, life's about relationships and like who you know, and really, but not who you know, but like how you can help other people. And one of my coworkers, her husband owned a company in Parma and offered me a job to like get involved with like quality management. Through like an ISO certification. They worked in the automotive industry and said, "Hey, like, we want you to join this company and do this and do that." And I'm like, "All right, that sounds good." And after a couple months, I'm like, "I love people." And they're like, "Scott, this is going to get real boring for you." So they gave me an opportunity to get into human resources. So that's where my human resources journey began, was back in 2005. And everything was trial by fire, right? Like, I had to learn everything from scratch, even though I took some HR classes at BW. Just really got an opportunity to like dive in, be resourceful, talk to the right people, network, got a chance to go to different like seminars to learn, worked with our attorneys, and really build up a passion for like human resources and the function. Everybody like thinks of HR as like Toby from The Office or like the Bobs from Office Space, like really boring, awful people that do want to do nothing but hurt people. I try to put a positive spin on human resources and really try to be a value ad-driven professional, not only for the company, but also for the employees of the team members. So I got an opportunity to work in human resources with that company for 5.5 years and got to do a lot of really cool things from, redesigning the benefits program to helping write the employee handbook to getting involved in performance management to coaching employees. And then I also did project management work there. I got involved in sales and meeting some of our clients. So that was a lot of fun. But after 5.5 years, I was kind of getting bored. There was no more upward mobility. It was a family-owned business that had about 325 employees, and there was nowhere to grow. And so I got called by a recruiter, decided to take, the next journey and became a regional HR manager for a local company here in Cleveland. There was three different locations, and I was responsible for one of those locations and got to really kind of be a part of like a turnaround process, Joe, where the company, like the previous HR person would have like a buzzer installed. And if you wanted to talk to human resources, you had to be buzzed in. And that's just not going to fly for me, right? So I was on the floor talking to people, getting to know them, like, what do they love? What don't they love about the company? And just really trying to build relationships. And I was there for about 13, 14 months, and I was getting bored again. I fixed a lot of things, not just myself, with the team of people that I worked with. And I was looking for that next opportunity. So I went to my boss, George, who I just have a lot of respect and admiration for. And George's like, "Scott, I don't have anything else for you at this time." So I got a call from another recruiter out of Germany, and they said, "Hey, we got this director of human resources position that's down in Worcester, Ohio." I'm like, "All right, great. Like, let's drive to Worcester, Ohio. I live in Cleveland. What's an hour commute?" And ended up spending 5.5 great years down in for that company at Tech4. Got an awesome boss and mentor and just leader out of that. His name is Kevin, that I still talk to this day. Someone that gave me an opportunity, saw something in me. And was responsible for, again, kind of coming in and helping fix the culture and the organization. I'll never forget, like, one of the first like weeks I was there, like, my boss Kevin's like, "Scott, I don't know if we're gonna make payroll." And I'm like, "Oh, like, this is great. Like, what did I just get myself into?"
For sure.
And just got a lot of opportunities to come in and just really help put, a positive spin on the organization and really help people and help the organization. And I got involved. I was hired as a director of HR in, Worcester, but then I took over the operations in Mexico and then three locations in Brazil. Got to be a part of a merger and acquisition team. And so just a lot of fun, a lot of growth in that. And then that company was in a sale process, and I wasn't sure I was going to stay. Actually got recruited by Amazon back in 2013 to go be responsible for three of their distribution centers in PA. Turned down that job. Great story about that too, Joe, if you want me to bring up that later on. And then also got an opportunity to work or to interview for the VP of HR for the Cleveland Cavaliers
Wow.
organization. Came in third out of 200. I'm like, that would have been sweet. Would have
That
got a
was so
ring when
cool.
LeBron came back in 2016, but that wasn't meant to be. And so I ended up leaving there after all this like turmoil, and I took a job as a VP of HR for a private equity firm. Was there for 2 years. Love my job, love the people I worked with. Again, tried to make a positive, impact on everybody I worked with. But after 2 years, like, I knew I just didn't want to work in the corporate world anymore. I wanted to do more. And so my neighbor Tim owns a bunch of real estate, owns multifamily like apartment buildings, and asked me to come in. And it was November of 2018 during Thanksgiving. I had a couple of days off from work, and he's like, "Hey, come in and like help me put structure, like values, and help me understand like what the people want on the team, and put performance goals and objectives in place, and just help me put some foundation in the business." So I did that, and Tim's like, "All right, Scott, like quit your job, like I'll help you get as many clients as you want. Like, well, let's just take a leap of faith." And at the time, Joe, I was making really good money with a private equity firm, had a nice car allowance. I walked away from a seven-figure stock option program, and prayed about it. Talked to Father Bob, talked to my wife Laura, and my son Alexander, and my parents, and just knew it was the right thing to do. So, because of that, we started Fortitude HR Solutions on June 24th of 2019. So we've been in business about 3.5 years. And I have no regrets at all. I'm very fortunate, very blessed.
Man.
I think a lot of it's because of my faith and with God. But we've been very successful from day one. We've not had to like go through the entrepreneurial like up and downs and the roller coaster that a lot of people go to. And I attribute that a lot to my faith and to my relationships with my family and just the people I've connected with. And so that is way more long of an introduction than you wanted me to go into. But that's a little bit about me from a work standpoint. Personally, I already talked about my faith being super important. I love sports. I love Cleveland sports. I love the Ohio State Buckeyes. I'm super excited about how they back ended into the playoff, even though they don't probably deserve it. That's a whole other story. I love spending time with my wife and my son. During that whole corporate journey I just shared with you, Joe, I've not been the most present father with my son or my wife. Missed a lot of birthdays, missed a lot of wedding anniversaries. I remember the one time it was our 10-year wedding anniversary, and I got a call the day before to go to London. And so I flew last minute to London with my boss and the director of finance for the company. And we spent time in the corporate office in London, and I missed my 10-year wedding anniversary. So like we made a lot of sacrifices as a family to have the lifestyle that we have. But again, like my son knows why I did it. My wife knows why I did it. My wife's been able to be a stay-at-home mom. And so like, if you want things in life, you got to work for them. And I never grew up with the silver spoon in my mouth. I had a lot of opportunities and blessings that I was, given maybe what, the like the privilege to. But nobody gave me what I had. I had to earn it. I had to work for it. So, putting in 80, 100-hour work. So I've just been very thankful through the journey. So again, way more than you wanted me to talk about. Sorry, Joe. Went off on a huge tangent.
No, never too much. Never too much, Scott. It's marvelous just to hear the background and kind of get a grasp. I mean, some of the highlights to me are just how hardworking you've been, and throughout the whole entire time, there's this zeal to be better, which is productive and important when you have your own business. And I feel like as being a dad or a family man, like you want your family, whatever unit you're a part of, you, Scott, want that to be better. You want your family to be better. You, the church group, you want the church group to be better. Your jobs, you wanted the jobs to be better. So of course you're going to go and do your own thing because you want other people to be better, the people that you interact with, the people you touch. And that's marvelous. It speaks a lot to you and both your hard work and also where the hard work's coming from with your heart. So it's impressive.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I think, probably my lack of balance. I don't really have a balance. I think you and I, we talked about that a little bit before we got on the podcast. I have like a work balance. And some of that I think is because of just some life events that have happened, right? And a little bit of my story, but when I was 13 and 14, my dad got laid off for the third time. And so like I always knew way more about financial stuff than I should have as a 13-year-old, and wanted to help out the family. So I got a job, and unfortunately ended up getting sexually abused by my boss. And so I think because of that, I've got like this drive that I always have to like prove myself to people that I work with, that I am worthy. And so that causes, some issues, obviously, for me and my family with like the time, how I spend my time, like the commitment. And so like it's been a big realization, I would say, over the last 3.5 years, even as an entrepreneur now and as a business owner, making sure that I take time for my family. And I helped coach my son in basketball. I never was able to do that when I worked in the corporate world. Eddie and I, we coached Alexander with Mark Bittner. Like we had a really good time, and like I don't know anything about basketball like you do, Joe, as much, but I love the sport and I just wanted to spend time with my son, so that was really cool. And then like as you own your own business, you have the ability to kind of control your schedule to some degree. Like we do HR consulting, we do recruiting with our clients. So when a client needs something, I'm very service oriented. Like my leadership style is very like servant leadership. So I always want to give and give and give, and sometimes at the expense of my own self. And we've talked a little bit again before this episode, about like just like my health struggles. And so I've gone like up and down like the roller coaster with my weight because I'm very goal oriented. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to hit this goal. I got to be this weight. And then I feel better, of course, because I'm more confident. But then I hit that goal and I'm like, all right, I'm bored. So then I've gained a bunch of weight. So like this vicious cycle for me, to stay like really focused when it comes to like my health. And last year, being a fun year, as you know my story, but I'll share with your listeners. So like having COVID, and then like them telling me like good luck. Well, that wasn't gonna cut it for me. So we did some, untraditional things by, going to the Lung Centers of America, getting ivermectin, and then taking the steroid, and after 2 weeks I was feeling pretty good. And then I'll never forget, I was supposed to go to DC with a new client and help them with, like, we put on these 2 day events to do like deep dives in businesses. And we're sitting there and I'm talking to the guy, his name's Oliver. I'm like, do you want me to come in person? I just got over COVID. It's been 2 weeks. I'm feeling pretty good. He's like, no, why don't we pivot to Zoom? And if we wouldn't have done that, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you today, because the day we were doing this was 2 days after that. It was on a Wednesday. It was 1:30 p.m. I just got done with one of my Zoom meetings for this client. We had like a half hour break. I came downstairs just to like sit and like eat something and like just veg out for 30 minutes. And I remember like my back, just low stabbing pain in my back. I
Whoa.
was having a little bit hard time seeing. So I go upstairs for my next meeting at 2 o'clock, and like I got done in like 20 minutes. I couldn't finish the meeting. My legs were like swelling like tree trunks. They were black and blue. I couldn't feel my legs and I was having a hard time seeing. So I'm freaking out, thinking I'm having a stroke. Something's going on. So I called my wife, Laura. I'm like, hey, like we need to get me to the hospital. So I couldn't make it down the stairs because I couldn't walk. I tried to walk, I fell. And so like I butt son couldn't carry me. And then butt scooted down the stairs, and then the ambulance arrived. 911 was called, and they had to pick me up out of 5 over 4. My heart rate was in like the 150s, and like they did the stroke test in the ER or in the ambulance. They said I wasn't having a stroke, I was responsive, but they didn't know what was wrong. And so we go to the ER at Southwest and run all these tests. And after like 3 or 4 hours, like I'm in excruciating pain. Like I thought I'm losing my legs. Like I can't walk. They do all these tests. They found out I had blood clots from like my toes up to my inferior vena cava, which is like the main artery that runs up to your
Oh
heart.
my God.
And so we go through this stuff and they start me on blood thinners. We have to do an MRI to see like what's going on. And they see all these blood clots. So the next morning they admit me to ICU that night. In the morning they come in at 5 o'clock. I'll never forget this because I couldn't sleep. And they're like, yeah, we got to do emergency surgery. So we did emergency double thrombectomy surgery where they cut behind your knees and they put like a catheter in to remove blood clots. And the surgeon came out, I guess, and told my wife she's never seen that many blood clots in somebody. And so, especially with somebody that was on blood thinner. So I go through this whole thing. They find out I only have one working kidney and like the surgery. My other kidney is like small and atrophied. And then essentially, like, I'm still alive because I have this birth defect, right? So, this is why, like, faith's super important for me. Like, God's got a plan for me. I got a bigger purpose. And I try to take that purpose in everything I do, whether it's, youth ministry and the volunteer work I do with the church, or working with my clients with an HR consulting, business consulting background, or if it's, working with recruiting and helping people find their next opportunity or their client or clients find their next new hire. Like, I just want to help people make an impact, right? It's kind of like being that 1% better each day. And so that's kind of like my goal, right? And so we had all this stuff happen last year in June. Really wasn't doing the right things from a health standpoint, wasn't eating right, was kind of feeling sorry for myself. Went through some like gout flare-ups and all this other stuff. And I suffer from depression and dysthymic disorder and all this other garbage. So I wasn't like living my best life. And so I remember my wife looking at me and like she was teary-eyed and she's like, what are you doing? Like God gave you the second chance. And I was just like skating by. I wasn't like taking my second chance really seriously. So I remember she's like, I'm like, I know I need to do something. I just didn't know what. And because my heart rate was always like resting very high, like it was in the 120s, just sitting here like talking to you.
Whoa.
And so I got up to 200, I got up to 270 pounds, and I'm only 5'8", 5'8" and a half, you know, if I were like, you know, higher, you know, shoes. I used to be 5'10". I think I shrunk. At least I tell myself that. And so like my wife's like, hey, like, let's go take a walk. So like walking to the end of my driveway, my heart rate would get up into like the 140s, 150s. No joke. And so like that wasn't sustainable for a long period of time. So I remember like she's like, let's just go walk to the mailbox. So we walked to the mailbox the first day. And I'm like, you know what? Like I got a family. I got my wife and my son, my clients. You know, I want to grow my team. I want to make a positive impact. I got my youth group that I want to like continue to help grow closer to Christ. Like I got to do something. And so I remember like the next day I got up and like every day it was like a progression of just taking more upon myself to do a little bit more physically. And I can't do the things I used to do. Like, I haven't been able to like lift weights, but I can walk. So I've been just taking one step at a time each day, always kind of like just like the retreat thing we just came from, Joe, like always moving forward and taking that step and trying to do a little bit more each day. So like that's been my theme. You know, because I don't want to sit here and just like solely die. Like I want to live, right? Like I got this second chance. And so from the end of May till today, I'm really excited to tell you like I'm down 63 pounds. I went from 270 to
Congratulations.
207. And it's not been easy, but like again, I have this ability. Like they didn't cut my legs off with the PCD diagnosis they gave me in the ICU. I don't know what that stands for, something Cerulea Dolens, but it's similar to like gangrene where they could have cut my legs off. And so like the fact that I have my legs, I should be able to take so many steps per day, right? So I'm like, I'm pushing myself to do that. I'm walking on the treadmill now every day, like 4 miles plus. I'm making it a priority, my health. I'm watching what I put into my body and like what I consume. And my wife will tell you, I don't always put like the best things because I'll do like frozen meals just because of like time, like a lean cuisine or something like that. But I'm trying to be like healthier. Like, and I'm drinking a ton of water. I drink probably 200 ounces of water a day. But I'm again, like I have this second chance and I have this responsibility. Like I want to get my wife, Laura, and my son, Alexander, to heaven. Like that's my job as their father and as their husband. So like I have that and I take that very seriously. And I want to be the best version of myself for like the people I interact with each day. So I can't do that if I'm living a lie or if I have this mask on because I'm super depressed or I'm sad. I mean, like life throws challenges at everybody. I don't care where you're from, how you were born. Like everybody's got issues and problems. And one of the things I love about human resources, and we'll kind of bring this full circle, is that like everybody's got a story, right? And I remembered when I was, you know, a VP of HR and there was 1,100 employees. Every one of those people was a part of our team, right? They weren't just a number to me. And so I always had like, you come in my office anytime, you can talk. I got big ears. They kind of stick out for a reason, I think. So try to listen. You know, sometimes it would be unconventional for an HR person, but somebody would tell me that, you know, their husband just got diagnosed with cancer or their wife and him, their, you know, the husband, they're going through a nasty divorce. And I would just sit there and listen, right? And then at the end, I'd be like, all right, is it okay if I pray for you, right? You know, like, because that's kind of taboo, like being in the HR world, that's not politically correct. And so, you know, I would make sure that I do that. And like it was really good, but it was also somewhat hard for me because sometimes I would like internalize that and like feel
Yeah,
their
for
pain,
sure. It's like a nurse.
because I can empathize with people. Yeah, exactly. And so just like trying to make sure that, you know, we're doing that, you know, with our clients and with our people that we work with, our team members at Fortitude HR Solutions. Like at the end of the day, I just want to give and add value, right? If I do that, like I know that I'm doing what God's purpose and what I'm supposed to be doing in my life, you know. And if I had all the money in the world and I didn't need to work and provide for my family, I would be doing something, you know, to help the church or help the youth out or help the homeless out. Like my heart goes out to people that struggle because everybody's got a story, like I said. I mean,
For
everybody's
sure.
got trials and tribulations and everybody comes from different backgrounds. And just because you grow up in a suburb doesn't mean you don't have issues. You know, it could be addiction, it could be, you know, alcohol, it could be depression, it could be, you know, they don't have a mom, they don't have a dad. I mean, or you could be in like the inner city and you don't have the same opportunities, maybe like Joe, you and I were granted in life. So again, I think it's, again, if people just treated people the way you want to be treated and they remember that, you know, everybody's got a story, I think this world would be a lot better place. But unfortunately, we get in our own way. We puff up our chest. We pound, oh, I did that. Look at what I did today versus look what I did for somebody else versus look what I did. It's what did I do for someone else today?
Yeah, for
Sorry, I went
sure.
off on another tangent.
No,
You put me
you
on a
answered the
podcast and
question.
I just go talk. I'm an HR person, so I can talk.
It's great. I'm lucky to hear it, man.
So go ahead. Sorry, I went off on a tangent.
Oh God, no, please don't apologize. For real. It's the stories are amazing. Such turnarounds. You've had quite a grave roller coaster, and like the highs have been high, man, and those lows are really, really low. It's wild.
Yeah, and like I'll give you a couple other examples. Like and like we have choices, right? We all get to make choices. And I tell Alexander, like, make great choices. Like, you're made for greatness, right? And one bad choice can ruin your life. And I remember, like, I was in BW. I'll never forget, the counselor was like, I was struggling big time with my depression. I was suicidal. I was drinking like 15 beers, washing it down with 3 shots at 151. I was on all these antidepressants, just trying to like not live anymore. And my counselor at BW is like, Scott, like, you need to quit school. You need to focus on your health. But now if I would have quit school, I would have lost the insurance I was on with my dad, and I couldn't get the help I needed, like going to counseling. So I'm like, you want me to like just stop all that? Like, that's not going to work, right? So I could have given it up and thrown in the towel there. I've had other issues where, you know, I tried to put a gun in my mouth, like just really dumb things, right? And like my mom and dad have always been praying for me. And like, I've had a lot of really good, like, you know, friends that have been praying for me. And then like the relationships, like with Father Bob and like Nancy Fiammingo, like the other people on the core team that I work with, like, there's a bigger purpose here. Like, you know, like I know that there's a bigger plan, you know, for me, just like everybody, there's a bigger plan for each and every one of you, right? It's what are you doing each day to, again, help other people? Like, that's been my theme since I was a little kid. Like, I just want to help and give back. Sometimes that hurts because you give too much or you help people and they take advantage of it. And like, I'm okay. Like, sure. It's kind of like, you know, you get smacked in the face. It's like throwing the other cheek kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes that's been bad professionally. But personally, like, I know I can go to bed each night and feel pretty good about what I've done each day. I don't have the regret. Like, I'm big on, like, you know, besides empathy, like the self-awareness, the self-reflection, those kind of things, that's important, especially as you get into leadership roles and you have a lot of people that depend on you. Like, when we hire people at Fortitude HR Solutions, like, we have other W-2 employees, like, I take it personally responsible for them and their families. Like, I don't just take on that employee or team member, I take on their families. And if I want to be successful, I mean, they have to be successful, and we got to provide for them in some shape or form. So I got to give my best foot forward each day.
That's great. It's such a holistic approach. And Scott, just to kind of dial you back, you had mentioned that you've had things from since you were younger. To take you way back, you had mentioned when your mom got sick with cancer. You were sitting at an interesting point in your life because you would, like, just to add the timeline for the listeners too, like, you had just mentioned 2 minutes ago that you were going through that depression in college and it was crazy, and you were drinking crazy amount of beers, crazy amount of alcohol and liquor. And then, like, on these antidepressants, a lot going on. Counselor says quit. You make it through, and then only to be greeted with, okay, like, here's your celebration, you know, mazel tov, now you get to deal with your mom basically fighting for her life at that point, as if you weren't just doing that yourself. Like, that's a wild, that's a horrible 1-2 punch. What was it, do you think, you took from caring for your mom? You mentioned that you are a servant leader, and I can't help but think in my head that as you put your job and your professional career on hold, the start of it really, you were taking care of your mom. And I can't help but think that there has to be a correlation there to some degree, that you've learned a lot through that, especially at such a young age, really.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it wasn't even a question. Like, I mean, my mom gave me life, right? My mom and dad gave me life. So, like, I mean, I was going to do whatever it took to help the family out. And that's why I started working when I was 13 and 14 after my dad got laid off. Like, so I think, again, having that work ethic from my parents and probably even my grandparents, and understanding, like, you know, it's my turn to kind of step up. It's like next person up, right? Like, if you play sports like that, if someone gets hurt, it's the next person up. And I think then, you know, like, just, you know, like, that'd be like anybody of, like, your family, your friends, someone that's sick that, you know, you want to do what you can to help. I mean, and not saying that it was most ideal, like, professionally, it would have been much better for me to go out there and do what I wanted to do in my career. But, like, my mom needed me, you know, my family needed me. So it's kind of like you step up. And I'm not saying that, like, I don't need any praise or recognition.
No.
Like,
yeah, I got you.
I would have done that and not told anybody about it. You know what I mean? I think it's just something you do, like, based upon how you're brought up and what your family, you know, means to you. And again, my family was there for me, especially my mom and dad. I mean, I'm sure I put them through hell, you know, with, you know, doing what I did with my suicidal nature or drinking and having an issue with taking antidepressants and, going to, like, I went to meetings and, like for AA and like they could have given up on me and they didn't, right? So, I mean, like, it wasn't even a question for me. I think at the end of the day, like, there's always time to work, right? And so, I mean, even though I got a little bit later start than maybe some of my friends that, graduated the same time as me, like, I think I've learned a lot, and I think that's even helped me in my career, like professionally, like even like the youth ministry work that I do, like with human resources, like working with teens in grades 9 through 12, like, you know how to deal with different personalities and like what's important to some people. And, like I always tell people, like in like youth ministry, you got to meet the teens where they're at. It's the same thing with your employees or your team members. You got to meet people where they're at, and you got to explain, like, no one likes change really. Like, if you ask people, do you really like chaotic change? People are going to typically say no. But if you can explain like what the change is, why we're doing this, how it benefits them, and find a couple people that will rally around you, then you can make it work. So I think those are things. And then again, like just the hard work, the resilience, I mean, the fortitude. I mean, fortitude means courage through adversity, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of times I could have given up. And like, again, it doesn't matter where your background is or where you come from. Everybody's got struggles, right? And it's about making the choice, like having hope. Right. I think hope's a good word. We heard that yesterday at church. And I mean, like what Deacon Ken said. So, I mean, like just having hope that tomorrow's going to get better and like I'm going to do the best I can each day. I think that's like was super important for me during that time period. That and just wanting to help my mom, again, somebody that gave me birth, gave me life, was there for me when, during some of my darkest hours. Like, why couldn't I, put my life on pause for a little bit and help her out?
Yeah.
And my family.
Those are some beautiful takeaways, and I'm sure you guys are crazy close. At least grew through that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's probably annoying to my wife Laura because we are very close. There's not always like boundaries, and like when you start dating people or you get married, they don't always understand that kind of the closeness that my family and I have.
Sure,
but again, like super, super close family.
Yeah, that's a weird one to definitely. Me. Like, I get that. Like, people are like, it's like, man, you're super close with your mom. It's like, yeah, you're not. Like, I'm sorry, you're not. But I'm not the weird one, I promise. Like, we're lucky, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a great thing to be close with your parents if you can. Like, anyone in your life, you're fortunate to be close to your siblings, to your parents, grandparents, whatever. You kind of touched on it a little bit, but also advancing a little bit. You had some crazy stories, it sounds like. You go out to this conference out in Arizona, right, to develop your youth ministry skills, essentially. And you end up meeting your wife. You had mentioned that there was a crazy story about three different girls that you also were interested in at this con. I mean, how long is this conference, dude? Like, what, give us a little story. What's going on?
It was, yeah. So the conference is like 4 days. I go to this conference, like not sure even like, is this what I want to do? Like, but I'm like, I'm open to it. Right.
Yeah.
And prior to this, like, I'm like, I'm not afraid of like, I cussed a lot. I swore a lot. And I'm there, like, and I'm in praise and worship, and I'm like, oh, like, I need to start listening to this stuff. Like, I felt really like I felt the Holy Spirit, felt like God was working through me.
Okay.
And I just fell in love, like with my faith again. And I'm at this conference, and I'll never forget, I actually like three other girls, and I meet Laura, and Laura was talking to somebody that's actually a client of mine now that I'm friends with. And like, he offers to like pay for her to like move to Ohio and all this stuff. Cause Laura's from Washington State. And, I'm like, well, that's kind of creepy. Like, those kind of things. And, but I just started talking to Laura. Like, I remember we get up, it's like the third day of the conference. I just went through this big transformation again with weight loss. Like, I've struggled with my weight on and off most of my life. And I just went from like being 240 down to like 160. I was in great shape and I was going to the gym each morning. So my buddy Russ and then Laura, they're like, oh, we'll go to the gym with you. So they went to the gym with me in the morning. And so, and I had liked these other girls, and I was telling Laura, like, I like these other girls. I'm not sure what I'm doing. Like, blah, blah, blah. I was very transparent. And, again, like we left and like, I'm like, all right, well, like I'll maybe see her again. Maybe I won't in my life. Cause again, she lives in Washington. So like, it was June 12th of 2014. I'll never forget. Laura calls me out of the blue. She was at a party. And so maybe she had a couple of drinks in her, but she just calls me with my sister's birthday. We're at like Chi Chi's of all places. And Chi Chi's doesn't even exist anymore. Like in Cleveland where we're from, Joe, all those restaurants are gone. And it was June 12th of 2004. And so she calls me, I step out at the restaurant to talk to her. We're having a conversation. And then every day from June 12th of 2004 until now. We've talked every single day, right?
Oh my
And like
God.
we built this strong relationship over the phone. Like I go to work, you know, like 8 to 5. I'd go work out at night. I'd go hang out, do stuff at church, hang out with my friends, and then from like 9 o'clock till like midnight, we talk every night on the phone. We would pray. We would talk about like just life in general. And like my wife Laura would be like, "Oh, like so, what's going on with this girl or this girl or this girl?" Like, and she would encourage me to like go talk to him. And so it all culminated in December of 2004. A bunch of us were going to Niagara Falls. There was like 30 of us going up there for the weekend. I'm like, "Why don't you come?" And she's like, "Well, yeah, I'll come." And I'm like, I never thought in a million years she'd like fly from, you know, Washington State to
Oh,
come to
no
Cleveland,
way.
Ohio to drive up
Yeah.
to, you know, Niagara Falls with us, but she does. And so it snowed like really crazy that weekend. So we couldn't go to Niagara Falls. Instead, we ended up going to Dave and Buster's in Westlake. And where there's like 30 of us at Dave and Buster's, one of the most awkward nights of my life. There's
Honest.
me, then there's Laura, and then there's this girl, Meg, and then there's Tina. Tina used to be Encore, and then this other girl, Mary Beth. And we're all sitting at the table, and there's a couple other people by me. And like, I'm sitting by all these girls. And I'm like, what the hell am I doing? So my buddy Scuba, aka Steve, pulls me aside and goes, "Here, drink this." He got me like a 32-ounce Miller Lite beer. He's like, "Dude," he's like, "you just need to like calm down." Because he could tell I was super awkward and uncomfortable.
My
And he's
God,
like,
so
"You already
funny.
know these other girls." He's like, "But you don't really know Laura." So he's like, "Get to know Laura." So Laura came in town for like 4 days. And flights ends up getting like canceled and moved to the next day because we have again more snow. And Laura and I just talking the night. One night we were watching The Wedding Singer at my house. Great shout out to Adam Sandler. And watched the movie. I'm like, do you want to try to make this work? So we did the long distance thing for like 6 months. I would fly out there for a week. She would fly here for a week. I just lost my job. I was just laid off. And so. And like, this is the girl I'm going to marry. Like, and I knew by May of 2005 I was going to marry her. And so I
Wow.
proposed to her before, because she ended up deciding she was going to move to Cleveland to see if it was really going to work. And yeah, the rest is history. We had a 13-month engagement. We ended up getting married in June 24th of 2006. So,
That's insane.
but again, like, but I mean, if I didn't, number one, go back to church and practice my faith, I never would have met Laura. I never would be a part of Life Teen. Laura and I wouldn't be married. We wouldn't have Alexander. I probably wouldn't be in human resources. I may not even be here, right? I may have given up. And so, like, there's all these things. So I think things don't always happen, you know, by coincidence. I think there's always a reason, right? And like, you know, their Father Bob always says, if you want to make God laugh, you know, you tell him your plans, right? And
Yeah.
so, like, I love that line. It's so like 100% accurate. Like, there's a plan and I don't know what it is. And sometimes I just have to trust. And I don't always do a good job with that. That's definitely an area for improvement for me, like trusting like what God's plan is. But I know there's a bigger purpose. So just
Yeah,
trying
for
to be what I
everyone,
can each
right?
day.
That's such a hard thing because
Absolutely.
we do have choices and we have the choices and we feel like we have some sort of control, which we do, because to be human is to have autonomy, and without autonomy, we're not human. So
Right.
there's this like weird dynamic. It's almost dichotomous that it's like, well, we don't breathe until God tells us to breathe first. But then at the same time, you know that we can change things because I could hang up this call right now. Like we have these choices that can have influences and impact. So it is very dichotomous. It's very weird. I find life to be very
For sure.
interesting. It's kind of weird all in all. Like life is weird. It's fantastic. I love it, but it's weird.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
if you like really sit and
Absolutely.
think about it. But
Very
anyway,
surreal. Very
it
surreal.
is.
Very
It is.
surreal.
So then what is like you made it work out of this crazy scenario. What would be your tip to, I don't know, young folk out there from a marriage standpoint? You're successfully married with a son and you're all doing well and are great people. So
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think, again, I'm talking a lot about faith. I think it comes down to
no, yeah.
faith. I think it comes down to prayer. I think it comes down to communication. You know, again, like sacrifices, you know, that you make. I think, you know, knowing what each other's goals and, you know, things in life you want to accomplish. I think that's important. I think, you know, again, my wife sacrificed a lot for me to kind of go out and pursue my career and my dreams. And so, you know, she's given up things to be a stay-at-home mom, and like she loves that. I don't think she would ever trade that in, but I think she would like more help from me at times, you know, because I'm dead tired. I work 80 hours this week. Like I don't want to do a thing, you know, in the house. And I think so. Some of it comes down to compromise, still being an active participant in, the household, and still, giving some quality time to the family. I think that's super important. And again, if you need to talk to somebody, or if you need, like there's like assessments you can take, like the love languages. Like if you don't know, like how can I best love you today, kind of thing. There's love language assessment that you can do, like the five love languages. And my
Which is
wife's is all about
impactful.
like time and like acts of service, right? So I think understanding that, knowing again what's important to her, and then again making sure we talk about it, I think that's really, that's been the key to, I think, to success in our marriage. And there's times where I fail, and I need to be called out, and I love my wife to death, but like she won't communicate at times. And so then I'll get a like a letter or a text. I'm like, oh crap, I screwed up, like because things like will build up for her. So it's a little, we just have different communication styles. But at the end of the day, I think we have the same goal at the end of the day in mind, about like, our faith and about getting each other to heaven. I think that's really what it's about. So.
Yeah, amen, right? You're doing something right if that's the case. And if that's the goal, then you're trying to do something right. So those two things are important. What are, let me guess, are your top two love languages, you think, Scott Hannes, is going to be words of affirmation? Is that one of them?
Sort of, not really.
No, I
No,
thought maybe it
I
would.
wouldn't put that in my top two.
Okay, you then at the same time, like you don't, I don't think it's acts of service. I don't think it's really, I guess I really don't. I don't, I would go, well, quality time. I feel like it's a lock for you. Like you like just hanging out and
Yeah,
having a good
that's
time, having
definitely quality
conversations.
time.
Yeah, quality time. What's the fifth one? It's quality time, physical touch, acts of service, words of affirmation. Oh, gifts.
Gifts. Yeah, I'm not a gifts guy.
Is it? It's either going to be acts of service or physical
I would
touch.
say it's service
Is
and
it
then quality time. Those are my two.
interesting? Okay, so what's the, why would you say acts of service? I mean, I believe you, but I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, just because I think again, like my parents and like my upbringing, and then like
Okay.
Laura, again doing all she does to like she's the CEO of the household, right? Like she does everything, like, and I don't do a lot, right? Like I kind of suck at as a husband. Like I'm not gonna cook dinner, like, and like Laura just went through back surgery, and I've had to like pick up some cooking skills, some culinary
Your poor
skills.
family.
But I yeah, exactly. And actually, I did all right. I didn't. They're still alive, so I didn't hurt them with my cooking skills. But I think that's probably one. And like Laura will do stuff for like the business because she's our CFO, and so that's been like helpful. So just taking stuff off my plate, and she does some marketing stuff that I don't have to be involved in. So I think we make a good team with that.
Nice. Yeah. I've never heard that saying before. Like, she's the CEO of the household. I don't know if you coined that or if that's a coin thing, but what a cool thing because yeah, talk about controversial, not to be controversial here, but I feel like a housewife is something that's like not a thing anymore, really. And it could be from because of financial
No.
things, it could be because of that's
Career
prevalent.
aspirations,
Like,
yeah,
yeah, like
absolutely.
any, like whatever you want to call it. And like that was like an honorable thing. Like, I think to like my grandma, like she has a prayer. That she's prayed, like it's hanging on the wall, like about how to be a great housewife, because that's tough. Like, I feel like people, like, I don't know, like you say housewife, and it's like, no, like it's not just like a stay-at-home mom. Like, this is like hard stuff with a lot on their plate, like you're describing. Like, this is crazy. It's a crazy job, for lack of a better way. Like, this is the CEO of the household. That's an awesome phrase for it.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Well, and if you look at like if you had to put an economic dollar value on like driving, if you have kids to like activities or school, there's a cost to that, right? If you had to put an economic value on cooking dinner, there's a cost to that. If you had to put an economic value on cleaning your house, there's a value, economic value that goes to it. So why shouldn't, she be, the CEO of the household, right? So I mean,
Absolutely.
like I don't know. I don't think it diminishes. I think it gives her more value, what she does. And like
Exactly.
again, it allowed her to have the time to raise our son. Like that's a huge value that I think a lot of people don't give themselves credit for is how do you raise your kids, raise your child? Like and what impact do you make on them? And helping them with their homework or again taking them to, band or dance or, sports activities or whatever clubs they're in, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, et cetera. I mean, there's a value there that's not always realized by people. So
Yeah,
kind of
it's
sad
so
actually.
important. Yeah. And so, Scott, then you went on and you had mentioned a story that throughout, like, you had a bunch of turnover, right, with your with your work. And at some point you had mentioned a story that you turned down from Amazon the opportunity to be the rep for three of the distribution centers in Pennsylvania, right? Now, what was that like? You shot down Jeff Bezos, which is kind of wild. So would love to hear this one a little bit too. What was the opportunity, if you don't mind sharing?
It was an HR business manager for over like three distribution centers in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, around that area. And like crazy salary, like stock options, like were $278 a share back then. I won't tell you how many they were going to give me, but let's just say I'd be retired. I could be doing like pro bono free work all the time now. But what I noticed is I'd be moving farther away from Laura's family, because Laura's family was in Washington, like to move to Pennsylvania. That was kind of weird. They didn't let me go tour the facilities in Pennsylvania. They flew me to a brand new facility in Delaware to go look at the facility, like a state-of-the-art facility. I'm like, all right, that was kind of a little bit of a red flag. They offered a sign-on bonus, which was attractive. But at the end of the day, I was also going to move away from my parents too, you know, and my family. So like we were going to be in this neutral site. We didn't know anybody. I'm like, does it really make sense to do? And so like I can live with regret and be like, oh, like I'd have all this money and stock options. But at the end of the day, like I think I'm doing what God wants me to do, right? At the end of the day. Same thing with not getting the Cleveland Cavs job, you know, the VP of HR, even though it'd been awesome to say, hey, I got a ring, you know, like LeBron did, like it just wasn't meant to be kind of thing. So I think like putting again, like the family, you know, in place, like the goal, like with Amazon always was if I got that job moving closer to Seattle, Washington, where Laura's family's from.
I see.
So that was like the purpose or the goal of like even applying with Amazon, but like to go to the opposite way, not closer to them, just didn't make any sense. So sure. I turned down the job. The recruiter at Amazon was not very happy, even though I'm still connected with her on LinkedIn. But I reached out a couple times and she's not responded. So that's
those are the most impactful connections.
It wasn't done on purpose or malice. It wasn't the right thing for me and my family at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean,
but that was a big struggle. I mean, I remember talking to Eddie about it and even Ed Sr. about it. I mean, I talked to a lot of people about it. I'm like, is this what I want? Or was I chasing the money and like the HR fame kind of thing? Oh, and I work for Amazon. Like, and back then it wasn't like Amazon like it is today. It was still known, but it wasn't like super well known. So I still have the offer letter. I look at it every once in a while, but not from a regret standpoint, but I'm actually thankful I didn't take it.
Yeah. So,
I think that's something that's also helped keep me grounded from like a gratitude standpoint.
Sure. And so it's kind of opened the doors too for Fortitude HR Solutions and the amazing company that you have going on now. Tell me a little bit, Scott, like, so you had mentioned, you're like, okay, I think I'm going to quit, like leave this really nice job with the perks that it had for you and say, I'm going to throw it all in and kind of go for it. And you had mentioned Tim, your neighbor, Tim, being an influence in this decision. What did pick us up there, kind of tell us, how did this go and what did that risk feel like? Like you had mentioned that people don't like change, and I agree with you, but here you were welcoming it with, I'm sure, a little bit of hesitant but also confident open arms. So
a lot of hesitancy.
Yeah.
a lot of hesitancy. I mean, I was scared. I mean, like I went from a very large salary to nothing overnight, right? That's, and I'm so like, what am I doing? And Laura was a professional, you know, photographer. She had her own business. And she's like, you know, I believe in you. Like, I'm going to stop doing my business so I can help you with yours.
Wow.
So like we had that type of conversation. You know, like we've had clients since day one. And a lot of that's because I think of Tim. Tim believed in me. Tim even, and I remember, and I don't even know if he remember saying this, but he's like, Scotty, he goes, if you can't pay your bills, he goes, I'll support you. So like that beautiful. Was like a nice reassurance. And we had money in savings, but it wasn't like a ton of money in savings. I'm like, especially to go from what I was making to nothing overnight. And then you got to worry about like insurance and like, you know, how am I going to pay for, you know, Alexander to go to, you know, private school and all these other things. Again, first world problems, right? It's not,
I get you though.
But I'm always like, Laura and I talked about like, well, if it doesn't work, we can sell the house. You know, if we lose our money, we sell the house. Like we can go live with our, you know, my parents, or we can move to Washington. Like there was other opportunities. But Laura believed in me and she's like, well, go for it. If you don't do it now, you're never going to do it. And so, yeah. you know, would have, could have, should have, you know, I could have done it sooner. But like, I think every job I've had or like experience with like work has built me to where I'm at today. And like, we've been able to impact and help a lot of people. You know, the HR consulting side of stuff that we do, Joe, like, yeah, we call it HR consulting. It's more probably business consulting, but like a lot of small business owners or entrepreneurs, they're really good at their niche and what they do, but they don't understand like how to maybe to write a business plan. They don't understand like having your core values and like your culture really defined. Like that should be the foundation of your business, right? Like if you build a house and you build it on like shaky ground, it will crumble, right? So having your core foundation built with your core values, your mission, what do you stand for, your operating principles, guiding principles, whatever you want to call it, like that should be first. Mm-hmm. And then understanding like as you're building out the team, when you're still, you know, a younger company, you may have to put yourself in all the different boxes on an organizational chart, whether it's marketing, sales, accounting, you know, whatever, product development, whatever. But as you grow, like who do you want to put in those seats from an organizational chart standpoint? And what does it currently look like? What can it look like in the next 12 months? Who's your first key hire that you need to make? How, like what role and responsibility does each of those people have on the team? Writing clear job descriptions, because this is, we can't, this is a Scott Hannes phrase, so we'll put the air quotes here, but people either live up or they'll live down to expectations, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you don't give clear expectations and communication of this is your role responsibility, here's your job description, your job duties, here's how we're going to, you know, do things at, you know, the, whatever company you work at, and then here are your goals and what we want you to accomplish, like you fail as a leader if you don't provide that stuff.
Yep.
So like, you have to take a good look in the mirror and be like, all right, did I prepare them for success or did I prepare them for failure? And so we do a lot of that with our clients. We help them set up performance management systems. We work on like, how do you set goals and are they realistic? Are they like pie in the sky goals?
Right. Right.
And then we look at like, you know, compliance aspect. I have some like great success stories that I've been very fortunate to be a part of. Like I have a client that's done about, you know, they did about $3 million the 1 year. And after like, this is 2 years later, now they'll do about $10 million wow. in revenue. So like, nice. That's been a crazy growth. And those are the kind of things I love doing. Like I'm very passionate about that. And that involves, again, a lot of HR stuff, but also like right people, right seats. If you've ever read Good to Great by Jim Collins, he talks a lot about that, like putting the right people on the bus kind of thing. And mm-hmm. that can help prepare you for like growth. Because a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners, Joe, they don't look at like an exit strategy, right? Like, where do you want to be in like 5 years? And maybe in 5 years, you're like, you know what? I don't want to do this. I want to sell my company. But if your company is only going to be as valuable as the people on your team, right? And if you have sure. defined systems and processes with like standard operating procedures, if you have good data and you can show the intrinsic value of your business is way more valuable. So if you go to sell it, or if you gift it to somebody, like there's a value that's associated to it. So understanding that and like helping clients prepare for that. I'm not a CPA, I'm not a marketing expert, any of those things, but I know enough about business. I've been very fortunate in my career to be, again, around some great leaders that have taught me a lot of these things. So I'm passing this knowledge on to small business owners or entrepreneurs that want to learn and grow. And then the other side of what we do, again, is the recruiting. And again, I probably hired a couple thousand people and I probably let a couple hundred people go in my career, but like, what's the right way to do it? And a lot of recruiting firms, you know, they're just numbers, right? They throw like, you know, people at jobs versus like, is it the right fit? Does it meet the culture of the client? Is it the right fit for the candidate? And I remember like one of the biggest things that drove me nuts when I was being recruited by some of these recruiting firms is I go to an interview and then I won't hear anything back from the company or the recruiter. And so like we try to make it a point, whether we call you, we email you, but we're going to give you some type of feedback. Oh, the client decided to go in a different direction. But we try to make sure we stay apart on top of that communication with the people that we work with. And a beautiful thing now is like I have a recruiting and sales manager. His name's Dennis. Dennis is phenomenal. Dennis really leads the recruiting, you know, division for Fortitude HR Solutions. And then we've got a great recruiter with Jake, and we've got some other 1099 recruiters, and we're going to be building and growing that as Fortitude HR Solutions grows. But we don't really spend any money marketing. We don't spend any money on advertising. Like we get a lot of word of mouth referrals. Yeah. But again, if you treat people the right way, you live by your core values and you get results, people want to work with you, right? And so that's kind of been our model. You know, we have our own values. Like we do planning meetings for our business. We actually just scheduled ours for 23 here next week. so we can go through that. But again, like, we kind of practice what we preach. Do I do a great job of it all the time? The answer is no. For example, like the $10 activities, like in the beginning, like, I booked my own flights if I was going on a trip. But sometimes you got to look at it, like, what's the highest and best use of my time? And that's not the highest and best use of my time. My highest and best use of my time is talking to clients and talking to people, you know, kind of being the face of the organization.
Sure.
So there's a lot in there that I just said. Sorry.
No, it's great. It's great. I was curious about that. Like, how do you know when you want to hire someone? How does that hit you? When are you like, because usually you find you find the need and you're like, okay, let's hire someone who might be a good fit for this.
So I have this exercise I do with clients. It's called a task responsibility worksheet. Darren Hardy's got something similar called the weekly rhythm, where I want clients to look at like in a week, how do you spend your time Monday through Friday, all the way through the day in 15-minute increments. And then I want them to associate a dollar value to that. Is it $10, $100,000, or $10,000, that task or that activity that I did? And then does it add value or does it not? The things that I shouldn't be focusing my time on, I may put those on in like a job description for someone else, whether it's like an office assistant, or we talked about like virtual assistants, Joe, before we got on this call. So it might be a virtual assistant. Like, they're still team members. So like, one of the other things I see that drives me nuts is like leaders or business owners, they treat a VA differently than they do like a W-2 employee, a full-time employee. They're still a team member. Like, treat people like you want to be treated, kind of the golden rule thing. But with that, like, when you get to a point where you're working 80, 100-hour work weeks and you got some cash flow, maybe you can't go and hire your first W-2 employee right away. Maybe you're hiring a virtual assistant where you're paying them, you know, a more modest, you know, wage that you can afford. Mm-hmm. And then as you build up revenue, then you can go and hire somebody in-house that's a full-time W-2 employee. You're going to have more kind of say in kind of what activities they do and how many hours they work when they're full-time W-2 than a virtual assistant. But again, it comes down to like, how do you train? How do you onboard? Like, going through, like, setting them up for success. Too many people will hire people and they don't do that. And then they're like, oh, why did this person not work? And then they want to blame the employee or the team member or the VA, but they don't look in the mirror and say, okay, did I do the process the right way? So I think understanding some of those things. But when you get to like 80% capacity, you need to start looking for somebody to kind of help you.
Okay.
And we're at that point right now, like on the consulting side, like I do a lot of the consulting work. I need to bring somebody else in because we've got too many clients and I can manage it, but like, that's all I'm doing, you know? And so I need to bring somebody in that can maybe help me write job descriptions or do some other things after I talk to clients. So we can continue to serve our clients at the highest level possible.
Yeah. That'll help you grow too, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Naturally, because you're spending your time doing things more valuably. Now with that, Scott, what are kind of some of your, whatever you're willing to disclose or comfortable with, visions for Fortitude HR Solutions in the future?
Yeah. I mean, again, my main goal is to help as many people as possible. Right. Okay. And so again, like, I think people like in business, they get the bad rap, like, oh, it's all about profit. And yeah, profit's important, but what can I do with that money? Right. Like, what impact can I make? And so like, we want to grow in 23, like, just preliminary without talking to my other executive team members, Laura and Dennis. I mean, we want to add more people to our recruiting team. So full-time recruiters, people that do sourcing of candidates, because a lot of recruiting firms, they'll just post job like on Indeed and that's all they do. We'll do that, but we do direct, you know, sourcing, or we'll cold call people. We have a database we pay for. It's called an applicant tracking system that we'll go through and put people's resumes in where we might find a fit later on for them down the road. And then, you know, we use LinkedIn. We use a lot of different tools, Wise Hire. And then our job is to take, if there's 100 people that apply or we show interest or we identify, we need to narrow them down to like the top three candidates. So some of that will be possibly hiring someone that does sourcing for us, that just does cold calling of candidates that work at competitor X, Y, and Z, maybe try to pull them from that competitor to work for our client. Mm-hmm. On the consulting side, we probably need to hire like one or two more people in the beginning of 23 to help with some of the lower level HR functions. And I want somebody that wants to learn the business, that wants to grow with us, so I can train them into being like a full-time HR consultant that can take on some of my clients. But again, like, I'm going to be pretty guarded about that because I have a relationship with a lot of our clients now. Mm-hmm. And so that would be probably a hard transition for me in the business. The recruiting wasn't hard for me. Like, Dennis has got it and Jake has it and Bob and Eddie does some recruiting for us. There's another guy, Mike, that helps. But like making that next transition on the consulting side will probably be a big challenge for me that I need to overcome. Because again, like we can't control recruiting, right? We can control who we present, but once we have that, client hire one of our candidates, I can't do much more than that on the recruiting side. On the consulting side, like the input that I share with them, like the data, the key deliverables, the action items that we're responsible for. Like I take that 100% as my responsibility to provide the best material and information. Now I can't control what a client does with that information. Like there's no like thing that says they have to use what we provide them. But if we have clients that get the same result and they don't change up their approach or they're not listening to us, that may not be the right client for us. So we may have some of that in 23 where we, reorganize or realign who our avatar or our correct, client is for us. And then we've been approached specifically by a couple people about doing some type of mastermind or coaching, which we may get into. Like we had one that we were doing locally here in Cleveland for small business owners. But unfortunately, people don't know what a mastermind is, right? So a mastermind, if you've ever read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, he talks about where two or more people gather to talk about business and concepts. That's a mastermind. And so there's other groups that like you can do. Like our mastermind was really cool. It's called the Executive Committee, and we kind of have it on pause right now. But like Monday, so like we would have different like topics, and we would meet virtually. And like the first Tuesday of each month, we would talk either about human resources or operations in a business. The second Tuesday was about sales or marketing. Third Tuesday was about like leadership, mindset, growth. Fourth Tuesday, we'd have some type of guest speaker. And then, we were at like a private Facebook group. We had like a we were starting towards the end doing like a monthly meetup so we can all talk. And so like there was a value, but people didn't understand what the mastermind was. If you're not in real estate, it's a kind of like a foreign concept. That and maybe we had the wrong people we were trying to attract. So like we
Sure.
put that on pause for now. We may come back to it, or I may start my own in the future, but that could be another division of Fortitude HR Solutions. We may get into benefits, like having a benefits division, because I love benefits, like medical bills, like through their health struggles. And so like that may be a division we start in the future. Those would be like some vision things that we have on my board. And because we work with people all throughout the United States on consulting as well as on recruiting. So I love like the wingspan of like the outreach that we can have. I love in-person meetings, Joe. I spend a lot of time on Zoom,
I'm with you.
but I'd rather talk in person, like you and I trying to coordinate this. Unfortunately, we had to do a Zoom meeting, but
I know.
I'd rather be in person. I'm one of those people, I feed off other people's energy, and like being over a computer screen, it's not the most ideal, but it allows me like through Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Google Meet. Like I have clients that are all over the US. And so like that's pretty cool that I
It
can work
is.
with people in a capacity and still add
It is.
value and like still help them get their desired goals and expectations met. So
Yeah, it is. It's one of the coolest, I think, things that came out of like our shutdown is the idea that you can connect so easily, just like this. I mean, it's better than FaceTime. It's business one
but
on
the
FaceTime.
But the downside of that is like we're made for community, right? Like people need to be around other human beings. And so
100%.
like I mean there's days, Joe, like
100%.
I'll be on Zoom meetings like from 8 o'clock till 6 o'clock at night,
I
like back
lose
to
my
back.
mind.
And like it's tough. I mean it's tough. I mean like I don't even give myself time to go fill up my water bottle or to like go take a bathroom break or eat anything. So some days Laura's yelling at me, rightfully so, because I don't do a good job. But I again, I'd much rather be in person, but it's not always the case or the ability to. So,
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you at all see potentially Alexander, your son, maybe taking everything over? Do you think, has he expressed any interest in that? Would that be something intriguing to you, or are you kind of one of those guys that would be like, let's sell it, we're done, like this is it, or just kind of wherever the spirit guides at that point?
I mean, to me, I'd love for him to have an interest in it. He's got to want it, though. I don't want to force it on him. Like, we have him on W-2. He's on payroll, doing marketing for us. He's supposed to be redoing our website. He hasn't gotten fired yet for it, but he might soon. But I think it's good for him to learn about business. Like, he's in Padua's got a MyTrack program for business. And so he's taking a business class next semester starting in January. So, I mean, we'll just see if he's interested in it. Like, I think he should be an attorney. Like, he loves to, like, debate. And he probably would be good at that. But again, like if he wants to, like I'd be happy to like, you know, train him and teach him about HR. He listens to a lot of the conversations like that I have on the phone if we're driving in the car, and he's just quiet. So like he's been exposed to HR stuff kind of his whole life. And so I mean that's kind of a cool thing, but I'm not gonna force him to do it. Like, you know, he wants to play basketball. You know, that's like his passion. Like he loves it just like you do, Joe. But if he doesn't make it, he's got to have a backup plan, like I told him. So we'll see where you know, the wind blows, kind of as they say.
Yeah, 100%. I was just kind of curious because you're a family guy, so I always think it's awesome. I think family businesses are awesome, and just being able to pass it down or have your kids play an integral role in it is it's sweet. Just like you with your wife, with Laura. I mean, she's great. So that kind of stuff's great. Family businesses are tremendous.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, if he's open to it, then you know, I'd be open to it as well. We've had a couple people approach us already, only 3.5 years in, about buying the company or partnering with us at a higher level and buying into the company. I'm not ready for that, nor do I want to probably do that anytime soon. Like, I want to see what Laura and I can build together, you know, with Dennis and some of the other key team members. I think there's a lot of impact and positive outreach we can do with what we do. It's just a matter of spreading the word. And like most people, when I tell them what we do on the HR consulting side or business consulting side, they're like, oh, we didn't even know you did that. I mean, because most people, when they think HR consulting, they think like employee relations, investigations, payroll, handbooks. And like we do some of that. Like I don't process payroll for people, but like one of my clients I was at last week in Virginia, we were doing like a payroll implementation of a new system. So they're going from ADP to Paylocity. So helping them with that and like helping them with that decision process and what makes the most sense, and kind of helping with negotiation. That's the kind of consulting I like to do. Or like we were looking at their benefits and they're in renewal time, and like what benefits make the most sense, and how is it going to impact the employees or the team members, and how can we provide better, you know, services to our team. So like those are the things I like to do. I don't really enjoy, like, you know, Johnny doesn't like Sally. It's like, all right, we're all adults here. Like, let's just like figure it out. Like I'll coach and advise the client on those kind of things. But I'm not the HR person like that's gonna talk to Johnny or Sally on behalf of the company, because I don't work for the company as like a W-2 employee. I'm a 1099 as like an independent contractor or a fractional person. So I don't really have the same clout that an internal person would have.
And like
So.
it's not like you can gather all that backstory and get the whole climate of everything. That's just ridiculous. Right? I mean, at some point being adult,
Yeah.
but I'm sure it happens
I
more and more
try
than that.
as much as I can, but yeah, it happens a lot. And again, like I'm very upfront and I tell them like I'm not going to be your internal day-to-day police department. That's just not who I am. You know, again, like I want to help you on the bigger things. And the nice thing is like it's more coaching, consultative. You know, if they use it, great. If they don't, then they don't. Like it's totally up to them. Like that client I was at last week, like we built a plan in 5 years to be a $100 million company. Like that's a lot of fun for me. Like, and that same client last year or this year in March, we bought a business, right? And so like going through that merger and acquisition process and the change management of it, those are the fun things I love to do. But a lot of people don't know that I do that because I don't talk about it on social media. I don't brand it that way. Laura always says we need to. I just need to do a better job of it.
Yeah,
So
that'll come. That'll come. You're
I
busy.
quite frankly, I just need to suck less at it.
Okay, fair.
So
It's fine.
like I know that's an area of improvement for me. So.
Yeah. Scott, kind of you've touched on it a little bit, but I'm always curious with people when they come on the show, who are some of your biggest influences, whether like I always say, like on the big scale, on the large scale, or even on just like a tiny scale, you might not even know the people, or there maybe have been certain happenings, which of course you've touched on many of the large ones, but even just like incidental ones. Like I feel like we can all touch back to a specific moment where someone totally random that you'll never see again, more than likely. Well, you had one of those stories and we see how that worked out. You're married to the person, but you know what I'm saying. So what are some of those influences in your life?
I mean, again, like I've been super blessed and super thankful for a lot of great people in my life. I would say, well, definitely, I think, again, and this isn't somebody that's tangible, but like God, like Jesus, like that example, that's all the stories in scripture. That's been a huge part of like my journey. I would say definitely like my parents, you know, big part of my journey and been influential. I think obviously Laura and her support, huge part of my journey. I would say Father Bob, again, huge part, probably why I'm still Catholic to this day. and practicing my faith. But Nancy, our youth minister, like that was a huge part of my conversion and my life, I think, as well. One of my math teachers at Paddle High School, Mrs. Bauman, again, I'm using names, sorry. Mrs. Bauman, but like she was super influential for me. She cared during a difficult time when one of my best friends, his brother, committed suicide at Padua, and just was super like receptive and just like listened. Mrs. Johnson, who was a nurse at Padua, I spent a lot of time like skipping study hall and just going down and talking to her. It's kind of funny. Alexander does the same thing at Padua now. He
Oh
goes
my
and like
gosh.
skips study hall and goes and talks to the nurse. So and like he didn't even know I did that. And then I would say it's Susan Kuznick, Dr. Susan Kuznick at Baldwin Wallace. During all that, like the stuff I shared earlier, like she was super like kind, supportive. And so Dr. Professor was his last name, and Ward, Bob Ward or Robert Ward at WW. Again, gave me a lot of grace during some difficult times again. And then like in the professional world, like working, I would definitely say like Kevin, he was my boss at Tech for 5.5 years. I would say Larry, who was an HR mentor of mine. He used to be a former priest. He's no longer a practicing priest, but he was, influential. Another Larry that worked for Pepsi as an executive. Again, just he actually made me cry in Kevin's office at Tech Four. But just taught me a lot about like watching people's feet instead of like talking about it, like watching what people do and their actions. And so that was influential. And then there was a VP at one bank when I graduated college. There was a piece of paper on the floor and he picked it up and he said, Scott, he goes, don't ever let something like that happen where you're too good to pick up a piece of paper. And that was always super influential. And I've carried that more probably in my work career than I probably ever would care to admit. So those are probably
It's
some of
great
the
advice.
people and men keep going on and on. So.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think it's always nice to recognize that and just give a toast really to the people who have made such an influence on us. We hear a lot through the stories that
Yeah,
you've shared. Sorry.
and I would even say some of like the core members that I've been a part of, Scott and Core, are like super influential and like been a good sounding board, kind of like a big brother to me. So he kind of holds me in check, which is good. And there's been other core members. Eddie, obviously, been influential in my life. And then if I look at like people I've never met, like Jim Rohn, Rohn, he's a motivational speaker, like great info from him. 12 Pillars. One of the greatest books I've ever read, and I'm not a
Yeah, he's
huge
great.
avid reader, but I like him. I like Dr. Eric Thomas. You and I, we talked about
Yeah, ET's
ET,
great.
just like the motivational hip hop speaker, and like just those kind of people. Les Brown and Key Johnson, like David Goggins. Like I don't always agree with all the language because one of the things I didn't share, but like when I was at that Life Team conference, like I decided one day I'm like I'm not going to swear anymore. So I really don't curse. Like I say damn and stuff like that, but I don't swear.
Yeah.
So part of that I think was because it's like, who do I want to be as a person, right? And I remember that re resonating with me in one of those talks. So
It's awesome.
that
I think that's
person,
a
that's somebody I've never met. So.
if it's one of those situations too, like with the just to touch on the swearing thing, I've always heard that it's a lack of creativity sometimes in the mind. I've and it pushes, I think, everyone, if you think of it like that, like as if you don't have a better word to fill in or a better adjective for whatever you're doing or a frustrated word or whatever the case may be. There are plenty of great words in the English language or any language, but in our case, the English language. So that's a great one to me too. I think it's a lot of us can go for that one, right?
Yep. And I got one last one. I would say Alexander. I don't think he even knows it, but his drive and his tenacity, like he's had some obstacles he's had to overcome with like sports and just like how he rises up from it. I think I'm more upset, about his situation with basketball than he is. And so like just his the way he's approached it, like obviously like it just gives me hope, I think it makes me smile that I think Laura especially, like we've done a good job raising. She's more patient than I am, and just like her patience and her grace in that whole situation. And then again, same thing with him. Like I'm one of those, like I get like angry. I'm like, well, screw them. I'm not gonna support that school anymore. I'm not gonna do this. And like, no, Scott, like we need to calm down. Like so, they hold me in check, which I think is super important. Again, I think the people in your life, I think, are what make you who you are as a person too, and like what influence you let them have on you.
Yeah, totally couldn't agree more, right? That idea that we are the culmination of the five people with whom we're closest. I feel like that's an adage that we're all used to, an adage. Cut that too.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's one of those words. It's one of those. And Scott, so I have two kind of closing ideas for you, and I think they kind of go hand in hand. One of the questions is, do you have any regrets in your life, or what is the biggest regret? And if so, why, and how did you overcome it, and how has it played in your life? And we'll start there.
So like when I hear the word regret, like I think one of the things I would probably, I mean, I talked about Amazon already, like that could be a regret because of the financial impact it could have had for me, my family, and for other people. But like, I believe like things happen for a reason. Like, and right. I think that I'm on where I'm at today because of those things, you know? So like, I don't know if I'd say regret, like am I disappointed in some of my decisions in the past? Absolutely. Could I have done better? Absolutely. But like, I think each thing that, you know, has happened to me, whether it was like the abuse or not taking a certain job, like it's made me who I am as a person today, and it's made me stronger. Again, it's that courage through adversity, and like times I've had to like speak up when I shouldn't have spoken up, maybe in the eyes of other people. I think probably I guess I can't pinpoint this. Probably my biggest regret is that my grandmother died, and I wasn't talking to her at the time. And so I was upset with her, and went to bed angry. And so like, I have this rule for me personally, like I don't go to bed angry. Like, I mean, I may be upset or whatever, but I'm not going to go to bed angry. So that's probably my biggest regret.
That's hard.
Maybe the other, so that, and probably maybe not taking care of myself, you know, from a health standpoint, you know, like those are probably the two big things for me. Again, Amazon, probably just disappointed because of what it could have done. But like, I look at that too, like what couldn't it have done? Like, I mean, I know there's a lot of people I know that work at Amazon, and they're miserable, and maybe they're no longer with their spouse or whatever, if they're married. And so again, that's maybe those people that I talk to, maybe it's not indicative of Amazon, but I think those are some things that I would think of when you mention that question.
Yeah. I think for people like us, it is tough because I'm with you. I'm on that board that there really things aren't just coincidences. There's a reason behind things. And it's hard to say, even in situations where you're like, man, I wish I handled this better, to say, and like, sorry to the people that you hurt through the action, but like, I'll take the lesson. You know, a lot of times it's like, you need to touch the stove, you need to mess up. And some of those, sometimes there's bridges that are burned. Sometimes there's physical things that go on that are kind of ramifications for those decisions. But ultimately, they're the culmination of us and the good and the bad and everything in between are who we are. So it's how we become the best of us sometimes is through those regrets, again, air quotes, but
absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky question, and that's kind of why I always put it out there. I get responses similar to yours a lot because I think people who are typically willing to come on a podcast or are typically interested in it do some introspection. And I've said to friends of mine before in conversation that people who don't reflect or who aren't introspective literally scare me because I don't know how you know what to do with your life or in anything or open the doors to growth or other possibilities, just all the way around. You need introspection. But here and there, with that kind of idea in mind, what role does gratitude play in your life? I'm a contender that living a grateful life is one of the keys to happiness. And I think that for people of faith, it's something that is required of us, for lack of a better way of putting it. But what role does gratitude play in your life, Scott? How do you live gratefully?
Yeah, every day, like when I pray, I have a big list of people I'm thankful for. And just, I'm thankful. Like I always say, like part of my prayer is I'm thankful for the ability to walk, talk, breathe, see, hear, and listen, right? Like all the things that you take for granted, I'm thankful for. And so I think it's been a huge part of my prayer life, my faith. I always think, you know, there's always someone else that needs more help than I do, right? So I try to be thankful for the food, the clothing, the shelter that I have, you know, and being able to, you know, work in other countries like I have. I've seen some, you know, different difficult situations, right? And just the way people live. And I think sometimes, you know, again, it's easy to take that stuff for granted. Like, you know, I have a nice clean shirt on, and I had food today, and there's other people that didn't, you know. And
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I try to be always very mindful of that, very purposeful of like my intentions and my thoughts. I used to at some point when I was younger, I'd write down a huge list. Now I just it's kind of more of like a daily kind of conversation with God, like, you know, what I'm thankful for, you know, and like trying to thank people that do a good job. Like it was like a running joke when I was in the corporate world. Like somebody would do something and I would thank them, and then I would send them an email and thank them again. I'm like, Scott, you don't need to thank us twice. But like I just want to show like my appreciation and my thankfulness for the work that people do.
Yeah,
So
it's a great recognition. That's how, that's a, like a little bit of a motivating thing too, as a leader, if you're thanking the people that you're working with. Like, people get thanked and they appreciate that. Little
yeah,
validation.
what they don't like is what they don't. I think even Laura and Dennis, they're like, you don't need to thank me to thank me. Like they'll send a thank you, and I'll be like, all right, thank you, I appreciate you. You know, like
Yeah.
it's kind of like, and it was a cell phone company that said, I appreciate you. And I don't remember if it was AT&T or T-Mobile, but this was like a couple years ago. So they made a joke about being appreciated. So, but
That's
I think
awesome.
it's important again, like especially in the field that I'm in, like always having gratitude and showing appreciation and respect for your team members. I think that gets lost in a lot of times in the corporate world. And that's why, you know, you hear the saying that people don't quit their jobs, they quit their boss, right? Or they quit their
Yeah.
manager. Because again, like not everybody is good at leadership. Like everybody thinks that leaders are born. I think there's different characteristics of leaders, but I think sometimes you have to learn those, right? And you have to go through it in order to grow as a leader. And you can be taught certain principles, but at the end of the day, it comes down to what your motivation is and what your heart say.
Yeah, you kind of touched on it, and you're we're great minds think alike, maybe, I guess. What is just kind of my final question here for you, Scott? What are kind of your closing thoughts, or maybe some piece of advice to either someone looking to do what you do, to work in HR, to work with people, to influence people and to help others, or just to whomever you want to dedicate your thoughts to? Is there something you want to share in that realm?
Yeah, don't give up. Like I'm living proof. Like you got to keep pushing. You got to keep grinding. I think every day is a new opportunity to help somebody. Like so, you know, use the chance that you've been given and help somebody. Whether you're a faith-filled person or you're not, whether you believe in, you know, you're Muslim or you're Jewish or you're non-denominational or you're atheist, whatever. Like still just be a good person. Like help other people. Show kindness. Show respect. I think at the end of the day, like we all get the same amount of time in the world, right? We all get 24 hours in a day. We all get so many, seconds in the day. It's what are you doing to impact other people and help other people? That's served me extremely well in my career and in my personal life. And again, like giving back, you know, to me, like that's what I'm all about. Like I just want to give. Again, it's kind of like there's that saying about like again the 1% better and trying to improve. I think that's super important. Like again. And you know, not taking things for granted. You know, like each day is a gift. Again, I shared with everybody like some personal stuff and things that have happened. And when you go through some of those things, it makes you just super appreciative and thankful for each day. Like the fact that I got up out of bed, or I was able to walk a step, or
Yeah.
I was able to see, or I got to sleep in a bed when there's other people that are sleeping on the streets tonight. Like, I mean, there's a humbleness and humility that come with that. And, you know, I think be vulnerable. Like everybody's got a story. Like if you don't have a good group of friends or a good group of people to network with, find a group, you know, go to, again, if you're not faith-filled, I would say go to a church, but like find people that you can confide in and talk to, right? I think, again, everybody wants to hide behind the mirror of social media and they talk a big game or they won't always share the positive things and they wear the masks. But instead, don't do that. Like, be who you are, be authentic, be real, live a life of fortitude.
Yeah, there it is. So Scott, thanks for doing that, for
Sorry,
being authentic for
I had to throw
us.
in there one time.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me right now? Scott, yeah, thanks
Wouldn't be a
for
podcast
you had to, and it was perfect to get it right in at the end. You just slipped it right in there. You're like, hey, hold on a second. Thank you for being here.
unless I did.
Thank you for that vulnerability that you talked about, and thanks for the stories and the great advice. And everyone who listened really can feel your heart and can tell with your intentions of things that you're just an awesome guy. And that's what it boils down. Like if people talk about Scott Hanna, it's like, hey, you know, like that's an awesome guy. Like that's a driven guy. It's a family guy. It's a man of God. All things that are all honorable and good. So to you, CEO of Fortitude HR Solutions, we wish you, of course, all the best and success as you wrap up 2022 and head into 2023. I thank you on behalf of Chats with Clark for being here, for taking the time to just talk with me and hang out and, you know, kind of pick our brains about some of these important topics, because the mindsets behind our actions and the reasons why we do things are what bring us together and where we can grow. So I appreciate you, Scott. So thanks for being here.
Amen, Joe. I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me. Sorry I was long-winded to anybody that listened. I'm a talker. I'm an HR guy. So I appreciate everybody, and thank you very much for this opportunity.
And everyone, again, thanks for listening. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. It's time that you're following along with the Chats with Clark podcast. We're nearing the end of 2022 here. We have a lot of great content coming your way before the year closes. And of course, diving right into 2023. Look forward to ramping up this podcast, getting it across the world, and hopefully sharing in these conversations with all of you. If you want to be on the show, please shoot me an email at chatswithclark@gmail.com. Again, this is your host, Joe Clark, signing off. Thank you.